What it is, Brad Lee back again with another episode of Dropping Bombs. Today in the studio, folks, I got a real treat. As always, Nick Salazar is here, founder and owner of Notorious Roofing. Now, some people would be like, Brad, why you got a roofer in there, dude? Well, it's your story that made me think, man, I need people to hear this, because with all the nonsense that you've had to deal with since how old?
Since I was born,
man. And grab that. Get close up on there.
Really, man, since I was born, probably. But it really started when I was 8 years old to go downhill.
Yeah, so what happened at 8 years old?
At 8 years old, I lost my mother. She was found put to sleep like an animal in her veterinary office. And so it kind of turned my whole family's life upside down. The kids got split. It was crazy.
But you said your dad killed your mom.
Well, my stepdad was accused of killing my mom. Yes. And so the evidence.
Oh, so he never got caught for it.
No. So he was a cop.
Dang. And he was a cop. Ooh.
Yeah. He was a cop.
Why do you think he did it then?
So
is he still alive?
He's still alive. He's actually dying. He's on his way out. By the time this drops, he might actually be dead. And so
he's a retired cop now?
He's a retired cop. Yeah. And why
would you think a cop would do something like that? Not that all cops are perfect, but usually, you know, a police officer is there to protect.
It wasn't a random thing. It wasn't like a random lash out. You got to remember this is his lover. And so lovers quarrels,
his lover?
But my mother was his lover, my stepfather. And so he was a cop and she wanted to leave him. And so she presented him with a restraining order and, you know, that let him know she was leaving. And, she was found put to sleep like an animal, actually on my sister's birthday. And so it was tried to make to look like a suicide, but like, who's going to commit suicide on their 7-year-old daughter's birthday, you know, right before. And so the other problem was his daughters were also on the police force, who were just a few years younger than my mother. And they were part of the people who collected the evidence. One of those daughters went on to become the county commissioner. So whatever evidence was collected was kind of went missing and tampered with over time. It's been quite a traumatic experience on my family. For
I know,
sure.
But this sounds almost unbelievable. It's like one of those Hallmark movies.
Oh yeah. It
not Hallmark. What's the movies? What's the channel that has always the drama?
It's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie for me, man. It's just another twist. I swear.
So you're 8 years old. Your mother commits suicide. Allegedly.
But
in your mind, and hope maybe others.
Well,
it was your stepdad that killed her.
Yes.
Why would he kill her?
You know, he was ending his second marriage. He was making no wages. He was spending all her money. He was a cop. He was awarded an insurance policy upon her death. And it's funny. There's another one of his daughters.
How big was insurance?
I don't know the actual number on the insurance claim.
Have you ever told him I think he killed my mom?
Well, no.
What if he listens to my podcast coincidentally?
He might. So we'll get into that and why he might and why I never told him. And there's a reason I never told him anything.
Was he
because of my little brother?
Though?
Yes, he was a suspect. Nothing was handled well enough to be presentable to him. So it stayed a cold case. And to this day, it is a cold case. But
didn't it go down in history as suicide?
No, didn't go down in history. It's a cold case. But
did they say it's murder?
They didn't call it anything. The first time I saw him in almost 10 years after my mom died, one of the first things he said to me was nothing about suicide, but he says, I think Mary did it. Mary was my mom's business partner. And so he said he thinks somebody else did it. Cause it was like,
why would someone want to kill your mom?
Why would somebody want to kill a 38-year-old veterinarian with 4 kids, you know what I mean?
But why? Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? And so, for an insurance policy, my assumption is money. That's why I think anyone really does a lot of these things over money.
And you're 8 years old at this point.
I'm 8 years old.
So what did you think? You didn't know anything at the time, did you? Were they fighting? Did you see them fighting?
Yeah. So when I was 4 years old, my real dad, he was a drug dealer. We were on the run from him and we were held hostage.
Well, your mom knows how to pick the winners, didn't
she? Yeah, so she had a problem with picking terrible men, man. And so
apparently your dad was a drug dealer on the run. You guys were evading him, ran into a cop's arms.
Yeah.
And then the cop killed her.
Yeah. He saved us one night. Basically, a task force removed my dad that was holding us hostage in this house. And one of the responding officers ended up being my stepdad. He was much older. When my mom died, you know, he was 50 years old. She was 38. He had already had a family. Two of his daughters worked on the police force. The other one lived in town. His youngest was 19. It was a town called Kiowa, Colorado, about an hour and a half southeast of Denver. And yeah, stay out of there, guys. It's still the good old boys club out there. And so, we ended up there and things were good, I think, for about the first year of my mother's relationship. And then he got abusive and mostly towards me and my sisters. And so he was abusive to her as well. And when she had enough, she tried to leave. And I remember crying on the front lawn of my grandma's, at my grandma's house the day before she died and begging everyone not to let her go, saying he was going to kill her. And they all laughed at me and said I was being dramatic and whatever, and took me inside. And I don't know, a couple days later, we were waiting for her to show up to my sister's birthday. And instead we got a call from a sheriff that they had found her at her stuff and all this stuff. And so our world got turned upside down that day, April 29th, 1995. And so I ended up in I was given custody to my grandma, but she couldn't take me. My grandpa was dying of Parkinson's disease. She took one of my sisters, and then I went to go live with a guardian. She awarded her custody over to somebody else that she thought could take care of me better than her. And it was a 50-year-old woman who, you know, Catholic boarding school, nothing in common. She didn't know how to, she wanted me to call her Major Cartwright growing up. So super huge change of pace. And I lived there till I was 15. And then I dropped out and I left.
That gave me some discipline though.
Gave me a little bit of discipline, but I realized how much I didn't like authority, and I was just rebelling. I was hurting. I didn't receive the discipline in the manner that I should have. And so I rebelled. I started smoking weed at 11 years old. I was doing coke by 14. I left her house and ran away by 15, you know,
snorting coke
by 14 years
old. You ever smoke it?
Yeah. 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 We'll get into that here in just a little bit. Okay, so I shot some stuff once with Gatorade, and I tell you, I could taste the Gatorade in my mouth. It was wild.
What does that mean?
It's just you put it into your arm, but it you can taste it in your mouth. You know what I mean? It's a wild thing. You know, some people use water or stuff.
So you were shooting it up.
Yeah, I was living very rebelliously, like as a teenager, and I was struggling. I was hurting.
Where were you living?
Well, I moved out at 15 years old, and I was renting rooms anywhere that anyone would let me. Everyone in my hometown kind of knew that I was like this troubled young boy whose mother was, you know, what they thought was a murderer in this small town. They ran this guy out of that town, actually. As soon as he, you know, knew he wasn't going to get charged, and he knew that he had an insurance policy, which his daughter...
They ran him out of town.
Yeah, they ran him out of town. And so he took my one-year-old little brother and dipped. He actually had a kid with my mom right before she died. And so he took that little boy and dipped.
And left you guys.
Just left us.
Because you weren't his.
Because I wasn't his. And so...
Were you the only other one?
There was me and two girls.
And he said, later, tater.
Yeah, took that insurance policy and left. And so...
Literally.
Yeah. And we got split up, and... Me and one of my sisters were together for a while, but then we got split up again and even more divided. And so sometime around 17 years old, I'm dropped out of school. I'm driving around selling weed to all my friends. Every day I would meet him at the Quick Lube. And so I show up at the Quick Lube one day, and there's this new guy there. He's about 30 years old. His name's Gary. And I was like, let's get Gary high, guys. So we get Gary high, and he starts bawling. His ex-wife's leaving him, all this stuff. We're a bunch of 17-year-old boys. Instead of being, you know, empathetic and sympathetic about the situation, we just thought it was fucking funny. And we decided, you know, let's see if we can get Gary high again tomorrow. And we would do that. It went on for weeks. And then one day we get Gary so high, he says something that changed my life forever. He says, he's high, sitting in the corner. We're just, you know, being a bunch of boys, goofing around, throwing oil rags at each other in the bottom of this quick lube, you know, and just being stupid. And he just shouts out, "My dad was accused of killing his second wife, and sometimes I think he did it." And everyone stopped in the room and was like, "What the fuck?" And even I was kind of like, and then for a second, I just stopped and I looked back at his name tag, looked back at his face, and I realized that was my stepbrother. I hadn't seen him in 10 years. And that was the youngest son of my stepdad's first family. And I thought, holy shit, this is how I can find my little brother. And so I start trying to get close to this guy. I start, you know, not trying to get him high to see him cry, but trying to find out more about what he just shouted out and why he said that. And honestly, he never really said anything ever again about that. He never really let me know where his dad was or his little brother was or where my little brother was. And he never found out that I was his stepbrother. But somewhere around the end of March, that divorce that he was crying about, something went real south in that. And he didn't show up for work one day. And I'm trying to get all my friends and go meet these girls at this hiking place. And so we send, you know, a kid from the quick lube to go check on him, and he hung himself. And so I knew I was never going to get any other information. And then they set a funeral day, and the owner of the quick lube said, you know, everyone at the quick lube, if you want to come to Gary's funeral, his funeral's on this day. And it clicked in my mind right there. My little brother. That's where I'm going to find my little brother. Haven't seen him in 10 years. And I got the address. It was my 18th birthday. And so on my 18th birthday, instead of enjoying it like a normal 18-year-old kid, you know, probably get to miss school, I was already dropped out of school and selling drugs because that's what I had to do to survive. You know what I mean? And not had to do, but chose to do, I guess. And I went to this funeral and I found my little brother. And when I was walking around looking for him, this old man comes up to me and he grabs me and he says some weird stuff to me. And then I realized that was my stepdad. He says some, "I think Mary did it." You know, my mom's ex-business partner. Like, that's how you say something. "I didn't do it." You know, just like the first things to blurt out of your mouth. "You're probably here to see your little brother." And I was. And so he took me to see my little brother. And I saw those stepsisters that were on the police force that I hadn't seen since my mom died and all the evidence got collected. And they were mean mugging me, wondering why I was there, thinking I was there to raise a scene. And he walks up to my 11-year-old little brother and he says, "Mark, this is your brother, Nick. I've never told you that you have a whole nother family from your mom's side. And I know you just lost a brother and you're burying him, but you have a brother right here." So my little brother gained me that day. Mm. And my stepdad didn't want it. And I always told myself if I saw my stepdad, I'd kill him. But I saw him and I didn't. I actually asked him if I could take him to lunch, because I wanted the opportunity to see my brother again. And so the next day, he takes me and my 11-year-old brother. We go out I take him to lunch, and we set ground rules on what I can do to talk to him, how I can talk to my little brother. And so if I would have said, "I think you killed my fucking mom," this guy would never have let me talk to my little brother for the next 8 years of my little brother's life. And I'll tell you what, dude, my little brother is my best friend. We are so close.
Where's he at right now?
Right now, he's a paratrooper, and he lives in North Carolina, just outside Raleigh, Fort Bragg. And so he's like 8 years, 9 years into the military. Great kid, you know. And
now your real dad, by the way, just so everybody knows, he was a drug dealer.
Yeah.
And he is where now?
He's still dealing drugs somewhere. He bounces back and forth between Mexico and Santa Fe, New Mexico.
So he's still peddling drugs.
Still being.
You don't talk to him?
No, he's a weird guy, man. And so I don't want to talk to him. He's got over 30 kids.
30 kids. Shut the fuck up.
I'm serious, man. And some of them aren't from the best. Some of them are rape babies. Some of them are.
What do you mean rape babies?
He's like a bad person. And so.
So he raped
people?
He's
raped some women, and they've openly said it, and that brought these babies to him. And this guy's got 30 kids. He's in his almost 60. And this dude just had, he's got a 2-year-old.
Dude, I almost want to verify all this. Like, this sounds like way too unbelievable.
Iron Bailey Salazar lives in Española, New Mexico. Got over 30 kids. Find him. Somebody on this is listening. I guarantee it. I've got it. So my sister has this thing where she goes and she likes to track down these kids. that might be half siblings. I don't want nothing to do with it. It's too much. It's, you know what I mean? It's, I'm not on the same page. I like that core set that I grew up with, you know, that core four, those three from my mom, the ones that I were in my house that I grew up with, and the one from my stepdad that I searched for forever. These other ones that are just like these half siblings, like it's hard to bring them in. And, you know, it's nothing against them. It's not that I could never learn to have a relationship. I'm just not actively trying to seek it just because they're blood. God, there's so many of them. Why would I, how could I even begin to go down that road? It's not what's important to me. It's not on my priority list.
Well, yeah.
Right. And so. So, yeah, that's why I never told my stepdad that. And so for the next, you know, tell my brother 7 years, I had to call that man that was accused of killing my mother to speak to my little brother. I had to call his phone so I could talk to that little boy. And I didn't even tell my sisters that I had found my little brother for a couple years. And when I finally told them, they were so mad and they asked, why did you do this? Why wouldn't you? I said, because I'm in fear that you might tell him about his dad. And they're like, well, we're going to tell him. Why wouldn't we? And I said, because you're going to take away something that we never had. We may not have ever had a dad or a mom, but he does have a dad right now. And if his dad is, you know, he has got his flaws and is treating him shitty in his own ways now, they already have their own relationships and their own quarrels. But I'm not going to turn this kid's life upside down and make him live with this heavy heart when he doesn't need to. And so we waited till this year to tell my little brother everything and present the evidence and all the stuff that we had checked out over the years from the Elbert County Police Department and stuff, and really tell him what, how I found him and all these different things. And he asked and different stuff. And we'd always tell him, we'll talk, you know, we don't want to talk about it or another time. And so every friend I ever had, they knew if they were my friend about my mom, they knew not to say anything to Mark. And
where's he at now?
He's in Fort Bragg with his wife.
Yeah. Well, you told me that. I should have remembered. But what if he listens to this?
He knows. He's heard it all. I told him. So we talked now. Yesterday. We talked yesterday. I said, listen, man.
What does he think now?
Here's what I'm going to talk about. He knows the allegations that were brought against his dad, and his dad's dying, and him and his dad aren't close. It's the only thing he ever had. And so his dad and him are close to an extent because that's all he ever knew. And it was just him and his dad in the middle of nowhere in this small podunk town. And he, you know, and I don't know. I don't like they can have, I don't tell him that, you know, you have to hate your dad. That's a hard one for me. I can't tell him that he has to. I don't even tell him that he has to believe this stuff is real. I know what the evidence was and know what happened and know how hard it was, how hard they tried to hide from us and all this different stuff. And so,
but at some point in time, after all that's done, you went like and started doing drugs and being a,
I was probably doing drugs the whole time. You know, I was 14 years old when I started doing drugs. And so by the time I'm 18, I'm still doing drugs. I'm still selling weed. I'm working construction and pretending to be a construction worker, you know, to my little brother and to my stepdad, and like, you know, showing him like, yeah, I got money, but it's really from selling weed. And so, you know, I spent all this time recreationally doing drugs and selling weed. And I got really good at selling weed, and until eventually, you know, around 2010, 2011, I got caught with 95 pounds and $80,000 cash of weed. And so I got set up.
Well, that wouldn't be considered good at it.
Well, yeah, I guess. You're not good if you're getting caught.
100%. Right?
Yeah. So I got set up by somebody, and I'm almost positive that I can guarantee, I know that, you know, and I'm not mad at them. They were probably in a situation where they needed to do with it. And at the end of the day, they changed my life forever. I lost everything, and I didn't end up in prison because the cops didn't read me my Miranda rights. And I rented two units, and they thought I only rented one unit. So when I got followed into a unit, there was only a warrant for one of the units. And so I walked with a lot of fear in my heart, thinking that every day was going to be the day that the charges did drop, or the day that somebody came in, you know, wanting to kill me because whatever or something, you know, who knew? And so like, I always worked construction. And so I had a really good buddy who kind of took advantage of the situation, knew that I was, you know, struggling, you know, having to rebuild my life, or, you know, I wasn't gonna be able to sell weed anymore. And he was like, hey man, I got a roofing company. If you build the roofs, I'll sell them and we'll go from there. And so
how'd you know how to build roofs?
I didn't, but he just knew me as one of the hardest workers labor wise that
So how did you know to build a roof?
I didn't know. And I told him, I don't know how to build roofs, man. I've been running painting companies and asphalt sealing companies. Like, I'm not afraid of heights or anything, but I don't want to do that. And he said, I'll buy you a new truck. And I said, all right, I'm coming. And so we learned together. I watched a lot of YouTube videos, to be honest. He said, hey, man, I know that I just bought this roofing company, but I'm going to turn it commercial anyways. So I don't even know what I'm going to do. We'll learn together how to install these flat roofs. And we went from being in an office half the size of this recording studio to, you know, being in multiple states and doing about $30 million in roofing a year, selling to Chick-fil-A's and all these different companies. And so we installed about 900 Chick-fil-A's over 8 years together. And so it was a great business partnership. And I say business partnership, and I'm doing air quotes right now, but it was one of the first major lessons in business that I learned.
To
always get a contract signed, get something in writing. And so he treated me like an owner until one day he didn't treat me like an owner.
Get it in writing, folks. I say it all the time. Get it in writing, even if it's your mom.
It's for real.
You know, just get it in writing. And it doesn't even have to be a long, drawn out legal document. Like, just jot something down on a bar napkin. Because when the shit hits the fan and or money starts rolling in, everybody has a different recollection of what was agreed upon. Everyone has kind of a different idea. And you know, I didn't say that. That wasn't the deal, brother. And a lot of times when friends or family do deals, they handshake, right?
Yeah.
And I always tell people, get in writing. Doesn't matter. Because when the money starts coming and now there's a disagreement, just pull out the damn piece of paper and see what it says. Keep going.
Yeah. And so he took advantage of the situation, said he'd buy me a new truck. Knew he was going to get a hard worker that would do anything to, you know, not go to prison and just live a normal life. And so I promised myself that I would hustle as hard as I can legitimately with my friend if I just had the opportunity to not spend 50 years in fucking jail. And so,
what were they going to try to whack you for? 50 pounds of weed?
95
pounds of weed. Where are they going to crack you for that?
God, man.
Because that's definitely the intent to distribute.
Yeah, definitely an intent to distribute. They honestly, man, I don't, because of the Miranda rights thing, it didn't even get that far. And so I couldn't honestly tell you. They got to like booking me, and then I was sitting around after my picture had been taken, waiting to get charges and whatnot for a while. And then after not getting released to general population, they kind of were like, we'll be in contact. I was like, what do you mean you'll be in contact? Like, what's happening? And they're just like, your charges are coming, we'll be in contact. And I just was like, I don't stay here. Isn't this where you're supposed to keep me? Like, I didn't know like what was going to happen. And so I was scared to fucking death. But at the end of the day, it came down to that. And I was dating a rich girl, and her parents were like lobbyists in Alaska or something. And so she was this spoiled brat, and her parents came to battle for her immediately. And so she was kind of mixed in with it. And she lived in that house with me that got raided and all that stuff. And so I think they had a little bit of help too, you know, in the whole situation and the case. And so she left me. I ended up with, you know, no money, lost both places, lost my car, had nothing. And this guy took me on and said, I'll let you roof for me. And so I was like, good enough, let's do it. And so, but what I didn't know was going to work with him is that my back was going to be against the wall the whole time. And so he was probably one of the best salesmen I had ever met. And because of this, my back was always against the wall. And what I mean is, he sold one Chick-fil-A. Cool, I'll get a group of friends, we'll build a commercial roofing crew, and we'll be your new roofing crew. And then the next thing I know, he's selling so many roofs, I got to build a second crew. I run out of friends. Where do I get more guys? 10 years ago, you couldn't go on Facebook and post a little job thing. You had to get on Craigslist or something, and you'd get a whole bunch of junkies and shit in that, coming to look at the gigs and who was going to work and jump on there. And so it was real difficult to build crews at first. And so as he got bigger and expanded into more markets, it was always, if you can't do this, Nick, I need to hire somebody who's going to do it. And so I never wanted him to hire anyone above me. So I'd say, I'll go to San Antonio, I'll figure it out, right? I'll go to Houston, I'll figure it out. And I would show up in these markets and be like, well, I don't know anyone here. Where am I going to find guys? And I would post Craigslist ads and fail and fuck things up and almost, you know, push him to the point where he was going to bring someone else in. And so I started having to think outside the box back then. And so 10 years ago, I started being like, well, where am I going to find guys? And I started to think about my boots. My boots smelled like shit.
Your boots?
My boots. I hated my boots. They smelled like shit because I was always at the dump. Because at the end of every day, I had to, being the leader and the what, I had to take the trailer, let everyone go home. I would take the trailer to the dump and I would dump it, walking around back there, lifting it and doing that stuff. My boots just started to smell. And so I said, you know what? I feel like I live at the dump and I'm always there early in the morning or at the end of the day. I'm going to start going hanging out at the dump. So I drove to the dump at 4 a.m., you know, and I started handing out my card to anyone that I saw dumping roofing material. Ooh, he's a crew. He's a working man. He knows what he's doing. He's obviously doing this. He's got all the gear and the tools and all the stuff. I can see it right here. He's dropping it. And every market we would go into, I'd show up and I would do that day in and day and night out. And during the day, I would go look up, drive around and look up rooftops, run up ladders and hand my crews to my, you know, my cards to anyone that was on top of these roofs. But I spent 10 years handing my card out at the dumps for Jason and different people. And so that's where now I've met all the connections on the labor side of things for the roofing business that I currently work with. And so I worked with Jason till 2017, my partner in that first business. And until, like I said, I was a partner till I wasn't. And when we parted ways in 2017, I was actually so heartbroken over it that I started smoking crack. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to believe and say out loud, but I blew $85,000 on crack in 8 months. I was spending about $10,000 a month. And I woke up with nothing, man. I was spending my savings on everything, strip clubs, booze, eating out, just whatever. And getting it started with coke, and then the coke didn't do enough. And then I was smoking crack, and then I just kept smoking crack. And it's all I wanted to do. I didn't want to get better. I didn't think there was a chance to roof more. I didn't know how I was going to move. How am I going to install any roofs if nobody's bringing it to me? Jason sold them all. I don't know how to do anything, right? And I didn't realize I knew how to do it all. I had to install the roofs. I had to take the test to be qualified in these states. I had to do all this stuff. But in my mind, I was so hurt from losing, getting pushed out of this business or losing out on this business that I didn't understand that I needed to grieve. I was only associated grief with death and not the loss of a friendship or the loss of a business.
Did you figure out how to grieve?
Crack wasn't it.
No.
No.
I tried that once. Wasn't it for me either, but I wasn't grieving.
Yeah.
I was just trying crack.
You were just, well, see, I lived on drugs recreationally through my 20s.
Yeah, but at some point in time, dude, all of that nonsense stopped, didn't it? Like, that's the 2017, you're smoking crack. That was only 5 years ago.
Yeah. Heck so, yeah. It stopped. I smoked crack for 8 months. And then after 8 months, I was like, dude, I'm going to die doing this. I worked my ass off to get through all of this shit, find my little brother, do all this stuff. Now I'm over here sulking, looking like a pussy. I don't know if I could say that online, but
of course you can.
Yeah. So I'm over here looking like a bitch, man. And I just can't tell myself smelling. I'm listening.
You just can't say smelling like a pussy.
Yeah. I was probably smelling like one, man. After 8 months of smoking that shit for, you know, hiding.
Why would you say that? Do you think they smell bad?
What?
Pussies.
Wow, smelling like a dirty one.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, well, you had to clarify.
Yeah. I had to clarify that. And so yeah, man, I had to realize I needed to grieve. I needed to stop doing drugs. I needed to pick myself up.
I was wondering why my team put notes that said key talking points, love and trust, and how to grieve.
Yeah, man.
Like, I wonder where they got these notes from.
Maybe me.
How to grieve? How do you grieve? Tell my audience, how do you grieve properly?
Well,
not smoke crack.
I think taking the time to feel.
How about getting some pussy?
Getting some pussy.
Is that a way to grieve?
Yeah, getting away.
I would disagree with you. You know why? Because that's just another form of addiction.
I could say that. I mean, I
think the best way to grieve sometimes is to just let the pain, let, just feel the pain.
Well, yeah,
that's deal it. With it. Let it consume you. Make, you know, go crazy, scream, but do nothing dangerous, like harm yourself or others, and don't get addicted to anything. Don't trade like that pain for addiction, because addiction is a lot harder to go. Pain fades after time, dude.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of people don't grieve, and they.
How do you grieve, though?
I think it's, you have to pay attention to your feelings. You have to really deal with your feelings. You have to understand why those things were hurting you. Why I was hurting. Why was I wanting to smoke crack? Because I was hurting. Because but I wasn't listening to why I was hurting. I was upset about this business that I had lost, thinking that I was like, well, why couldn't I?
Now is this again? Reflection you're bringing up? How do you know? How do you know this? Did you go get a counselor?
I am in counseling. Yeah, I take my mental health very seriously these days. Now, I've actually planned out at this point in my life, I'm married with a kid. My life has dramatically changed from 2017. And so I have a startup roofing company. I have a wife. I have a 2-year-old.
By the way, folks, if you guys want to support this dude, because again, there's a lot of people out there that'll be like, oh my God, this guy, I can't believe his story. It was so crazy. It's a poor guy that want to support you. So I want to mention, how do they support you if they need roofs?
If they need roofs, yeah, reach out and
notoriousroofing.com, by the way. Yeah,
there's another way you can also help on top of, you know, going to my business is donate to the Fresh Women's Start Foundation out of Phoenix, Arizona. It's ran by one of the most wonderful CEOs. Her name's Kim McWaters. They are giving women the opportunity to live lives like my mother should have, giving children the chance to not grow up in no single parent family houses or in foster care or things like that. They're elevating women to rebuild their lives. And so that's another thing that you could do. If you don't want a roof, you can always go donate some money to my friends over there, because they're doing the right things.
Otherwise, folks, notoriousroofing.com, or you can follow them on Instagram at KingSally777. Why King Sally?
My last name is Salazar. Everyone called me Sally growing up, and I always told myself I was a king. And back when Instagram started 10 years ago, you could just make, what's a hashtag, you know, put at, you know, whatever. And so like, I just made a dumb thing thinking it would never stick, and I never changed it. I probably should say the real Nick Salazar or something, but
that was easy. King Sally 777. Why triple sevens?
I was born on the 7th. So it's my lucky number.
Yeah. And the 777s, which trying to hit in Vegas.
Yeah.
So dude, I mean, it sounds like you're kind of hitting the lottery a little bit, because after all that nonsense that you had to deal with, you kind of still ended up, you know, getting in the roofing business, you know, being successful, now starting a roofing company that's doing several million in revenue.
Yeah.
And growing.
Yeah.
Now, again, are you going to come back in 3 years? And I found out you're smoking crack, and now you're just like a freaking crash victim again?
Absolutely not.
What's going to keep you on the straight and narrow?
That wife and kid I have. All I ever wanted growing up was a family of my own. And so right now I could say that I am honestly living my dream. So whatever successes come after this are just icing on the cake. You know what I mean? God knows I want them. I'm going to try that much harder to provide for this family that I love so much.
Gratitude.
And I am so grateful for
that. Now, when it comes to solar, because I got a few people in solar that listen to the show, how do you help solar companies?
Yeah. And so
you're a roofing company.
Yeah.
How do solar guys get estimates on the spot, you said?
Yeah. So if anyone wants an estimate, just go to my website, notoriousroofing.com. The first thing you're going to see is instant estimate. You guys can answer 10 questions and get an immediate, instant, rough estimate. And if you like that, my team will have a signable proposal to you in 15 minutes.
You said rough estimate.
Yeah. And so it's based on basic squares, because sometimes my team will revise them and look at it and see that it might actually be a little bit cheaper, and they'll send you one that might be a little bit cheaper than what comes on.
Shit. You'd be the first company in the world to do that.
Well, we priced it a little bit high.
I'm sorry, just to see agreed to a $5,000 price, but we found out it's going to be a little cheaper, so we're going to save you $1,000.
Well, we do this basic square price, right? And so we base it on a basic overall, you know, size of your roof. And if we see some stuff that might actually cause it to be a little bit cheaper, we can know we can give it to you for that. We'll send you something back that might be a little bit different than that. But we don't want to lose money getting an instant quick estimate out. And so we got to put a little bit of buffer in there. And so they come across it really quick. And so the goal is to make sure that you guys are getting estimates as fast as possible, because historically, the roofing in the solar industry, you know, should be like peanut butter and jelly. But
I'm going to try to make it that way.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to bridge the gap between the two industries, because even though they should be symbiotic.
Well, because if I'm a roofer, why wouldn't I sell solar at the same time? And if I'm solar, why wouldn't I sell roofs at the same time? And then just give it to a roofer to roof and give it to a solar guy to put solar up. So, exactly. So I'm just at the house. Like, why am I not also selling them landscaping? Why am I not also becoming their garage door guy? Because I'm building a relationship with an individual by selling them one of those things. And if I'm already selling one of those things, why wouldn't I now take the whole entire suite of home services to my customer?
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of times having that extra thing, that extra resource might help you from the sale, you know, that's being impeded on. And so maybe they want to go solar with you, but they need that roof so bad. And unless you can provide them with a roof, they're going to have to go with the other solar company that has a roofing company on lock, and they're going to, and can get them an estimate right now. You know,
is it hard to get estimates quick?
I think for a lot of solar companies, it can be, because historically roofers, they sign pieces of paper or documents for insurance proceeds. So all they need is just your signature, and it says, we work for insurance proceeds. Whatever we can get out of your insurance company plus your deductible is ours, right? And that's so easy. But
people say, I don't care because it's the insurance company.
Yeah, the insurance company is paying for it.
I'd want to know, how much do you want to charge to replace my roof? And then I would want three bids. Why? Just to make sure you're not ripping me off.
For what? Insurance proceeds?
No, insurance proceeds, it doesn't come out of my pocket, but I'd still want to be, again, a good, diligent partner with the insurance company.
Yeah.
Or do they deal with it?
I would deal with it. We would deal with it. And so.
So you just go deal with my insurance company.
Yeah, so you don't have to deal with any of this stuff, because chances are
the insurance company's not going to let you rip them off, right?
Yeah, no.
And they'll get three estimates.
We'll go back and negotiate back and forth on what's a fair price.
So how does that help a solar company?
How does what help the solar?
What you're talking about?
How getting an estimate super fast? Well, I mean, historically, solar guys are door knockers. They're out on the doors. They're looking for estimates quick. They're not going to find a roofer that's going to want to drop what they're doing, go out, possibly inspect the roof.
Do you need a roofer to do that?
A lot of times they do, but I'm using technology to my advantage, and we're just doing basic overall square prices. And then we'll send somebody out within 24 hours to go check on number of layers to make sure that things are all good. Nothing needs to be revised on that. And so yes and no, I don't know. It's kind of a wishy-washy there, I guess.
But there's people listening with the solar company, so they should call you if they want estimates fast.
Estimates fast, or just somebody who's knowledgeable in multiple roofing systems. A lot of roofers, you know, they only do shingles, or, you know, they don't do tile. I'm installing 35 tile roofs a month here in Laughlin, Nevada. I'm installing, you know, down in Florida. I just
you ever do shingles?
I do shingles, spray foam, TPO, PVC, EPDM, all the flat roofing stuff. Like, whatever you, if it's a roofing, you know, manufacturer out there, I install it. And so I actually have quite a few qualifications, and can hold some pretty cool warranties up from my manufacturers. I can provide upgraded material manufacturer warranties. Basically say, if I go out of business, my material manufacturer will still back this warranty.
Yeah.
Because they know I installed it.
And nobody cares about your past. Nobody cares about your felony record, or no, you didn't get busted.
I didn't get a record.
See, that's the thing. Like, there's felons out there that are trying to, you know, get somewhere. A lot of times, you know, when you mark the thing, people don't give you as much chance. And then there's guys like you that you just didn't get caught. You're still a felon.
Yeah.
We're all felons. You committed it. Exactly. We're all felons. Maybe not him, but give him time, because he will be.
Yeah.
Like, I think we're all felons at some point in our lives, and we just didn't get caught.
I absolutely was. And I feel that that's actually what turned me on to your podcast. That's that phrase right there. I was listening to it. It's just flipping through memes or whatever, and I heard you say that phrase years ago, and I said, what did that guy just say? I love that. And I downloaded Dropping Bombs, and I've been listening to this show ever since. So I wholeheartedly believe that.
So you're part of the bomb squad.
Yeah.
See, so now you need to call yourself if you need a roof. Because I always ask the bomb squad when they say, well, you know, how do we support you, Brad? I say, you support me by just supporting my guests. Because the better the guests I get, the bigger the podcast gets, the bigger the guests I get, the bigger. It's just all this cyclical. Now, someone might say, dude, well, why would you bring on Nick? Well, the reason why is because, dude, you've overcome adversity. Most people don't know how to do that. They wouldn't have a good attitude right now. They would have given up, or they would have blamed what happened to be a loser or a crook or commit suicide or whatever it is. Like, dude, you got a lot of shit happen to you, and you seem to be doing just fine. How did you get past all of that trauma? If you could give Bomb Squad one bit of advice to close out with, how do you get past the trauma? What if people are listening, they've had a lot of shit happen to them. How did you get past it to where you don't let it define you or affect you?
Well, I've been my biggest fan since day one. I've always believed in myself. So I've loved myself so much, and I've always wanted so much better for myself and dreamed that I could. And it's kind of like Andy Elliott, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder, right? He said he had a chip on his shoulder growing up. I've had that chip on my shoulder. I understand that. I feel that to want what everybody else has, you know. I saw other kids going home to their families, and I was like, I'm not going home to anything. And so just to know that it someday is going to get better no matter what, and to constantly work on yourself. I think loving myself and paying attention to my emotions, but to not listen to that little bitch voice and to lie down when life's kicking you in the gut, man, it's going to kick you in the gut. And honestly, just because my life is doing well now and I'm, you know, creating millions of dollars in revenue in roofing, I still
want to smoke crack.
No, I still think that there's still hard times to come, man. There's going to be ups and downs. Building a business is still hard. You know what I mean? Choose your hard. You want to smoke crack hard, or you want to build a business hard? They're both fucking hard.
I do everything hard.
Yeah.
Like, I read hard. I read that piece of paper fucking hard. Are you reading those notes hard?
Yeah. It says, don't be a bitch.
Where'd you get that one from?
from my heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a good one. Yeah, I agree with that one. What's another one?
Well, I guess for people who have, I struggled with a lot of anger growing up from these things. And so channeling my anger, I had to learn to do that. I had to learn to be so pissed off that, you know what? I can't deal with this anymore. And instead of beating holes in the wall, do something like, I'm going to go get a job roofing. I'm going to go work for my buddy. I'm going to watch YouTube videos till 1 a.m. to make this fucking work, because this is all I have left. Like, channeling that anger somewhere was always just something that I needed to do to kind of survive and build on myself. And so getting a hold of my emotions and learning to be more binary in the way that I conduct myself.
Binary. Where'd you get that from? Gary Vee?
No, actually Tom Bilyeu.
Tom Bilyeu.
How do you say it?
Bilyeu.
Yeah.
Just so the way that he is. So you're listening and doing personal development.
A lot of personal development, man. I went to Closer School Live. It's actually what changed my life. My first
six. See that, folks? Hey, you hear that, folks? Closer School Live. By the way, one's coming up April 28th to 29th. If this episode drops by then, go get your tickets.
Get your tickets, guys.
ClosureSchoolLV.com.
Yeah. I mean, dude, honestly, all the self-help between hanging out with you, Andy Elliott, Sam Taggart, all these different people, getting into the circles. I was telling this kid, like, I two years ago was telling my wife, like, I'm going to find a way to work with these guys or be around these guys or promote myself with these guys and get into their circles or their masterminds and learn to sell like they do. And so I, you know, paid that $10K at that first Closure School Live to get that mentorship with you guys on that special package, on your first Closure School Live package. And so doing that.
Do you get to come to the next one free?
Yeah, you said, I believe what you said is anyone that takes one of these red folders gets VIP for life.
That's what I think I said.
Yeah, you said it.
That means, dude, April 28th, 29th, you're in already.
I'll see you. Oh, I'm there. I'm getting notifications on my phone. See? I just didn't know if it was going to be this one only or not.
What do you mean?
Because you said for life. I was like, is this really a for life thing?
Sure.
Yeah, that's
just
awesome,
it's
man.
Just one more chair.
Yeah, just one more chair.
Only 83 people were smart enough to do the package, though.
They were anyone else that didn't do it was foolish, man.
Yeah, but 83 people can come to the event every time I do one. Which means it'll never be an empty event.
Oh, because the 83 people that did that first one. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, only 83 people did it.
It's crazy because there were so many people there.
No, there wasn't really that many. There was like 300.
Oh, really?
There's probably going to be a lot more this time. But we'll see. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I make an announcement and the whole world comes in and goes, and then sometimes I make it and it's almost like nobody shows up. I'm like, this is weird. And I think it's because sometimes I'm suppressed because I'm talking about shit on social media that I shouldn't be talking about. And sometimes I'm not. So it's like, I told my team, stop getting me suppressed. Stop not getting me suppressed because they don't do it. They prevent me from it. So I'm like, do what you can to keep me from being suppressed. Because that reaches everything. So, dude, I appreciate you coming in. Man, it's a inspiring story.
Thanks.
It's almost unbelievable. They ought to make a movie about you. Nick Salazar, Notorious Roofing, at King Sally 777 on Instagram. And as always, until next time, keep it real.